and welcome to tonight's episode of the Rangers Rundown, the internet's number one Texas Rangers Oakland Athletics Appreciation Podcast. I'm Max, and I'm joined tonight by Mike.
How do?
And Hayden.
Suck it, Houston.
We've got everybody back together. We all hate Houston. We all love Oakland. That's weird.
That's enemy of my enemy is my friend, and that is true time and time again. This ancient wisdom comes forth like a jewel of wisdom in the American League West.
It's at least insanely funny.
Yes.
It is deeply funny what is happening to Houston right now, which is, for those not entirely in the know, Oakland tied Houston for the divisional lead on Saturday, briefly. Houston did manage to take it back. Verlander outpitched Sean Manaea in the Sunday finale to that series. But that's right. The Oakland Athletics, a team that has not had first place in the AL West outside of the month of April since, I think, 2014, managed to do it this weekend. Partially some injury luck. Correa and Altuve and Springer for a little while there have been hurt for Houston. But Oakland is playing like a whole bunch of dudes with their pants on fire, which I guess makes you play good. It's a weird phrase. I've never quite understood that one. But they're playing like their butts are burning, and it's been super fun to watch. If you've watched it, I mean, I'm not sure that I've watched a ton of it, but I've watched some Sean Manaea starts. I've watched Chris Davis mash some dingers. I've watched Edwin Jackson and Trevor Cahill be good in the year 2018, which seems like 10 years off of when they should have been good, but whatever. That seems fine. Nothing to look at here.
It's a bizarro, like Edwin Jackson for real. I did not know that they were actually still letting him pitch, and it's because he has a 2.58 ERA over 10 starts. That's why they're still letting him pitch. Isn't he like weirdly young though, even though he's been around forever?
He's like in his mid 30s. He's like 34, 35.
Let's see. Baseball Reference says that he turns 35 in like 2 weeks.
There we go. 34, 35.
Nailed it. Yeah, so it's odd. I saw a thing that basically was saying the strategy for the A's is just hope that the other team hits it to Matt Chapman every time.
It's not wrong.
And it's not a bad game plan.
How many members of the 2015 Chicago Cubs play for the 2018 Oakland Athletics? That's what I want to know. Cahill and Jackson for sure. If there's anybody else, it would be very funny. But that's probably it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't imagine it's a much deeper list than that. Still, good list. Excellent list. They got some fun players on this team. Like you're saying, Matt Chapman is a demigod right now. He's playing absolutely Adrian Beltre-esque defense at third. He's batting .276, .362, .500, .139 OPS plus. He's got like a pile of dingers. It's fun. He's a very good player. Phenomenal defender too. He's just an excellent defender at third. Really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, it's one of those tools that comes through the screen very easily. Some people are like, oh, this is a good defender, but you don't. You know, you just kind of are mostly going off of word of mouth. You watch an A's game for 5 minutes and you will see this guy just made a play that nobody else can make. And that's super fun, which is partially why it is. Again, it's easy to like the A's this year because they usually get by with a bunch of bad players. Like, what's his name?
If you say Jed Lowry, I'll fight you.
It is Jed Lowry, but also like...
That guy pisses me off.
What is... What's his name? Nerd Power with the glasses. Played for the Brewers for a little bit.
It's Jed Lowry. That's the only person.
Eric Stogard.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm used to getting beat by the Eric Stogards of the world.
The Adam Rosaleses of the non-Rangers world.
Exactly. So, good for them. Good for them. And what makes it even better, though, of course, there still is a lot of games left to be played, around 40, I think. So there's a lot of ways this could end up shaking out, and nothing is even close to being decided. But, you know, just sure would be a shame if some kind of team were to trade for a woman assaulting closer for the playoffs, so that they could defend their World Series title and then
lose it based off that guy being bad. That would be great.
Well, I was just gonna say that they don't even get a chance to use their morally questionable action. Like, they don't need him. Well, I guess they might need him to make the playoffs in general, but that move was made so that they could win in October. And sure, it'd be a shame if they don't even get a chance to play in October. Just if everything falls apart and they collapse to the Oakland A's, who nobody predicted to even be good, to take over one of the best teams that we have seen in a long time. Sure, it would be a shame if that were just to... if the chips were to fall that way.
Would it be? That doesn't seem like a shame at all, actually. That seems fantastic. Oh! Are you being sarcastic? Is that what's going on here? Because, man, it would be real delicious for the Roberto Osuna team to get just cosmically bitch-slapped.
It's heading that way. What is the record since, like, the second half or the trade deadline or something? I guess
the Rangers have a better record since the All-Star break than the Astros.
Yeah, I just want us to I want Oakland to pull a 2015 Texas and come and take it.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, and for the Astros to pull a 2012
Rangers, like Josh Hamilton dropping the damn thing at right field, just make me sad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They deserve it.
So the Rangers really do have a better record than the Astros in the second half. That's
Mike has never led once.
That's really funny. It's, you know what? Let me say this to all
the Rangers are 15-14. I think I heard that today. Yeah.
Let me say this to all the Astros fans that are listening right now, especially turn the volume up real loud. You know, you're just lucky that you're done playing us for this season, or else we would just go down into Houston and take that silver boot and really just make you miserable. But good for you is that you don't have to deal with the Rangers anymore, but the Texas Rangers, that's our state. We own the state because we have a better record than you. In the second half, do not look at anything else at all. It is very clear that you are inferior.
Third most runs scored in baseball. Like, what else do you want?
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of those runs being scored, how about second half Joey Gallo?
He's pretty good.
I'm just going to put that out there. Very, very MVP good.
Easy. If Joey Gallo were to put up this kind of thing over a season, he would win it, like, falling away. Like, it wouldn't even be close. Other than the fact that he plays in the same team as second half Rougned Odor.
Ooh.
Right?
You promised to share some numbers earlier, and you were saving them for the episode. I would like to hear those numbers.
Funbers, maybe.
Right. Ooh, Funbers. So let's have a little conversation about second half Joey Gallo first.
Okay. Sure.
Second half, Joey Gallo. That guy's doing some fun things. So I have a 283, 383, 685 batting line. It's good for a 180 WRC+.
Sexy.
Yep. Ooh. We've got 10 home runs hitting that span. Second half, Joey Gallo last year, by the way, was a 229, 357, 572 player. Good for a 139 WRC+. Still pretty salty. But his teammate, Rougned Odor, the numbers don't quite pop in the same way, but they're better because of the, I think, sustained play we've seen from Rougned in this span. Yep. So what I've pulled up here is second half, or since June 1st, Rougned Odor numbers. I'm gonna pull up his second half too, just for giggles, just to see if it gives me anything fun. Give me that second half. What does the Rougned Odor second half look like? Oh, so again, 180 WRC+ for Joey Gallo in the second half. Rougned Odor, 351, 417, 667, 186 WRC plus. Pretty good. Rugnet Odor. Pretty good.
Actually, my hero. You said that was a 417 OBP?
Yep.
Dude, how many walks did he take all of last season? I'm just so happy.
Seven?
Like, that's honestly, not a ton.
It's probably pretty close to seven. Let me check.
It's been a really incredible run for Riggy. I mean, he is just doing stuff that we haven't seen him do. So 2017, Rugnet Odor, over the entire season, he took 32 walks. Riggy has taken 33 walks in 94 games. He played in all 162 last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he did. We all know that.
He's taken more walks.
Yeah, Spaney did not pull him once.
Yep. And about 300 fewer plate appearances. He's walking more already.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's just swinging a good bat. He's hitting for power. Oops. He is making contact. He's taking those walks, and his strikeouts are staying in a really palatable range. Mm-hmm. He's at 24%. It's down a little bit from last year. It's above what he was doing in 2015, 2014, when he had those really, really promising early runs. But in those years, in 2014, he walked 4% of the time. 15, he walked 5% of the time. He's basically doubled his career walk rate up to 8.5%. Strikeouts are staying where they need to be, and he's just mashing. The thing that really stands for me is the defense. Like, he actually looks like a second baseman now, which is kind of wild to me.
Yeah, he's been listening to Mr. Chu. Shinsu Chu has been helping him out with the batting thing, and he looks like Chu at the plate now. I mean, with that on-base percentage, 417, that's very Chu-like. So, yeah, maybe we found the value in Chu's contract finally. It's what he can do for Odor.
Worth it. Worth it because, oh man, this is the kind of player, I mean, this is better than the kind of player that you extended back in 2017 or before 2017. The fact that he's turned it on this way, because he is squarely 24 and a half right now, and you would just assume that he's going to get better as he approaches his prime, and what looked like a waste of $50 million now looks like an absolute steal. I mean, we know how low it can get, so you don't want to declare everything to be, you know, on a Hall of Fame trajectory or anything like that, but man, it feels good. Oh, it feels so good. And it's interesting because we still have Profar, which is another discussion we can get into if you want, but very glad that we didn't. It could have been really dark. It could have been really, really dark.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people that are calling for Odor to be traded, which it's ridiculous. Number one, there is no value in trading him.
Yep.
You know, you'd have to eat almost everything, and then you miss out on his upside, and it's a double whammy. So, no, very young player. You gotta keep working on those guys. You know, this is a very, very young team, and they're playing some lights-out baseball on offense, at least. The pitching is hit and miss, as we know, and is going to continue to be that way for the foreseeable future. But this team, this core, they keep playing together, and they're just going to keep getting better, in my opinion. And then more of the young guys are going to be ready to come up, and then JD's going to fill in where he needs to. And this is going to be a well-oiled machine on offense, and it just remains to see what they can do on the pitching side.
And that's what I was looking forward to with the season. We didn't expect the team to be super good overall, but you look at the young pieces, Gallo, Odor being two of the biggest pieces, and you'd say it would be really great even if we don't win a lot, if these players really build on their past success and turn into clearly establish themselves as cornerstone players of the next winning team, and then we'll just fill in the rest of the talent around them. But we have to hit on these players that we already have and that we're already banking on. And so it seems to be that that's the case. And not to get crazy, but anything can happen in baseball, as we see that the dang A's are in first place, or they were 12 hours ago. It wouldn't blow my mind if we acquired a good pitcher or two, got lucky with another pitcher, and were competitive around these guys next year, because the offense is legit. The offense is top of the line. And if you get lucky on some pitchers, or just make some cash-heavy acquisitions, maybe the sky isn't falling. Maybe we're going to be competing here pretty soon.
For sure.
It wouldn't shock me.
I mean, we're talking about a team, like you were saying before this, that we figured the pitching would be bad, but that you hoped the young hitters would make some steps, get into a position where you could feel really good about this offense in 2020, 2021. And yeah, there were some hiccups early season. Some folks struggled. Yeah, obviously, there were some injuries. I think we had to ask some questions about ourselves of what Joey Gallo's progression was going to look like, or if Rigan Odor was fully toast. And, you know, maybe this is some just small second half hot streak, but I think we're seeing the kind of play that seems like a progression. Seems like a step forward, especially from Rugned. You know, Gallo has been absolutely on fire. He was a really good second half player last year, and we talked about that early on in one of our first couple of episodes about how good Gallo was in the second half last year. But I mean, he looks like a more confident hitter. Joey today had what? I think he went 0-for-2 with a walk and 2 strikeouts, I think was the batting line on Sunday. And that was good for like a 114 WRC plus, which was his season line right now. Like, he's a dude who's just going to get on base a couple of times, maybe mash you a dinger every 2 or 3 games. Take some good at-bats right now. He's a plus in the field. He's looked very, very good in right field. The defensive adjustments for Gallo, and then especially for Ruggie, who was a pretty crappy defender, have been really impressive to me. Odor has turned himself from being a very bad defender into a guy who's made some really impressive plays over the last couple of weeks. I know Levi had a very good article for The Athletic about Tony Beasley and his influence on guys like Rugned. That was a great read. If you did not see that piece, go ahead and pull that one up. We'll try and share it after this goes up. But
it was good. I read it.
Yeah, it was a good piece, and I think it speaks very well to the character stuff that the team was saying about a guy like Ruggie, especially. You know, Texas comes out there and says, you know, we believe in these guys. You know, these are the folks who are doing the right things. And I think fans kind of saw not that last year. We saw a dude who got put out there every day despite being pretty bad. Played all 162 games, and he was one of the worst players in, like, modern memory. And folks were saying, I don't know, is this guy actually doing it, or is he taking it off? You know, now that he's getting paid, is he playing anymore? And the team kept saying, no, it's in there. And I think there were legitimate reasons to doubt that last year, and we're seeing it right now. This is a dude who has clearly put the work into improving his defense and improving his base running. He's been thrown out a couple of times this week. He's being more aggressive than maybe you'd love to see, but I like it. He's going out there and he's a game in every day, and he is dialed in right now at the plate. And it's very, very fun to watch. That swagger is very hard to replace. And I don't know, I'm on board with it.
And that home run in the rain, Levi made some comment on Twitter, something to the effect of, that's something you need to see in a movie. That was a pretty cool little thing. Right before they had to stop the game and roll out the tarp, wondering if maybe that was going to end up being the final score, because the Rangers were trailing right before he hit that home run. That was really cool to watch.
Very fun. It has been damp over there from what I gather the last couple of days. Y'all getting some rain?
We are. Well, last couple of weekends, I mean, last weekend when I was in New York, I kept seeing it all over Twitter and Facebook that it rained almost the entire weekend in Dallas. So yeah, some unseasonable weather. It's kind of nice. It beats 110, I'll tell you that.
It does. Yeah, it was a lot of fun watching the grounds crew, like, just absolutely go nuts yesterday. I thought they were using the gator to, like, knock down the tarp and running out there. It's always fun to watch what those guys do when the weather comes through. So, good work out there.
I agree.
managed to keep the field intact and play a Citizen Rangers wins. One Rangers loss, a very Rangers loss, like a game that was kind of in hand, sloppy, messy, just sort of all the way around crappy, and then got blown up in the late innings. I don't really mind losing on Shohei Ohtani bombs, but...
pinch it, Shohei Ohtani
bombs. Yeah, pinch it. I guess I don't even... I don't, like, super want to talk about this, but we're gonna a little bit. So, the Cole Hamels trade.
No!
Yep, we're gonna do it. The Cole Hamels trade has been completed. Alexander Ovalle... He was the Ovalle. I don't actually know if it's pronounced with the J or not. He was the last part. Is that right?
Sure.
I think that's who it was.
It was the opposite end of the spectrum from what we were initially thinking. We were thinking, okay, well, we're getting a Butler.
An interesting upper middle levels prospect, and we got an interesting bottom level, you know, a DSL player.
Yeah, so that's awesome. What's equally awesome is how well Cole Hamels has been pitching for the Cubs. No, that's not awesome. That makes me feel awful and dead inside.
I think it's
the typical Rangers season.
So, just to revisit an earlier conversation, remember when we were speculating why the Rangers and the Cubs made so many trades? Is if they were good trade partners, or if every time the phone rang in the Cubs front office, they're like, oh my God, it's Texas again.
Yeah.
It's beginning to make me wonder.
Yep.
And they got themselves Cy Young Cole Hamels pitching for them right now. Yeah. It feels good. It feels really good.
If anything, and I'm on the team, like a disclaimer here, I'm on the side of the things that would say that we don't know, you know, the level of influence and coaching that pitching coaches, managers, hitting coaches have on the team. You sometimes, like, actual good information one way or another trickles out, but mostly we are pretty blind to that fact. But I just don't see how, I mean, something as simple as like pitch selection and frequency can go unnoticed and un. Hey, Doug, did you see Cole Hamels? How he's doing better when he's left here?
And, tossing that changeup and being good.
Did you ever think of that maybe working out for him, or did you bring that up?
Did you ever consider having him throw his best pitch, like a lot? Did that
like
come up in discussions? Like, hey, changeup specialist.
Doug responds, Cole has a changeup?
Cole Hummels? No, I don't. I really wish that there was more to look at. I'd like to be in a situation where I could do the research and come up with a really good theory on position coaching. I'm like, hey, you know, is Doug Brocale good or bad? You know, does managing matter? And I don't have the information. Nobody has the information or the data in front of them to make that call. But in some ways, it's nice to see Cole go out and pitch well, because we never had anything against Cole Hamels as a person. Seems like a pretty upstanding guy. It was always frustrating that he wasn't, you know, Philadelphia Cole Hamels for Texas outside of the first season, really. Maybe the first full year. Because he kind of faded at the end of 16 and never really kind of put it together after that. It was always frustrating, but man, it is irritating to see Cole go over to Chicago and just be like lights out while Texas is watching Eddie Butler pitch for them. And I really believe in Eddie Butler. I'd like to, like, he's one of those guys that I say keep giving him every chance forever. This was a first round pick. This is what he was seen as being a potential torp player when he was a prospect with Colorado. And he's never been good, but he got called up really early and blah, blah, blah. Like, he's the guy I want to keep giving those opportunities. But boy, does it suck to watch Eddie Butler give up like 17 runs in an inning to Los Angeles while Cole has given up like a 0.8 ERA. Like, dang it.
And especially because It was so it wasn't that we just had to trade Cole Hamels. It was that, okay, he's pitching really poorly and we're not going to get anything for him, because the last 2 months when he could have really helped us out, he trended, he was tanking his value. I'm not saying he did that on purpose, just like the result of his game,
right, sure,
that his value tanked, and literally goes to Chicago, puts on the pinstripes, and just starts remembering the Cole Hamels.
Yeah.
Like if he could have done that for like three starts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Butler came in and his first two appearances for Texas, you know, he went 1 1/3 innings, faced six batters, did fine, you know, didn't give up any runs, one hit, one walk, no strikeouts. In his entirety, he's pitched 13 1/3 innings to a 7.4 ERA. With three walks, four strikeouts, and five home runs. You know, not the most sustainable pitching line.
Five home runs in 13 innings?
Yep.
Oh, dear God.
More home runs than strikeouts, which isn't great from what I understand.
No.
Which is
no baseball savant,
very little.
I'm no baseball savant, but I'm pretty sure that's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great. Unless you're a hitter. More home runs than strikeouts is fantastic. If Eddie Butler was an outfielder, I think we'd feel very good. Unfortunately, he's a pitcher. So, that kind of sucks. But trade returns, man. So, the other players to be named later in the Keone Kella and Jake Diekman trades came through a couple days ago for Texas. For Diekman, it was a pitcher, left-hander, named Joshua Javier. Tepid, our dear friend Michael Tepid, had some scouting commentary on him that he received from a source. Apparently he's a decent frame, could grow into being a sort of proper major league-sized pitcher. Low, mid-90s. He's very low-level, not a lot on him. I'm not entirely sure to pronounce this name, but Shurton Apostle, I think. Does that sound about right? Shurton Apostle?
That sounds good to me.
He's a third base prospect. He's from Curacao, along with guys like Jeremy Profar and Jonathan Jurickson Profar. He's from Curacao, too.
Mm.
Uh-huh. Angelton Simmons, Andrew Jones, Xander Bogaerts. Just a whole pile. Didi Gregorius, he's also from Curacao. A whole pile of middle infield guys. But Shurton Apostle, third base. He's a big boy. Big, solid guy. Could be good power. Could probably get a big arm. Don't know a ton about him. That's the return. Again, not an electrifying name. Not a big-time, you know, national-level prospect, but could be a fun dude. Taylor Hearn pitched for Frisco today. I managed to catch a couple innings of that. He got into some home run trouble, but was otherwise kind of fun to watch. Got to still be pulling for him. Let's hope these pitchers come along. I know Hans Kraus and I have a great turn for Hickory, but it looked pretty unlucky to my eyes. Pitchers.
I saw WayJ pitching for Frisco this evening.
Ooh, how was that?
I mean, flashes of brilliance. He pitched three innings, gave up two runs. Doesn't sound awful, but he had a base runner every inning. He had a few strikeouts, but he came in, they were down two, and then Frisco rallied, and they were up two. And then it got to the top of the sixth. This was a seven-inning game because it was part of a doubleheader. And he allowed them to come back and tie it up, which was a little bit frustrating. But Frisco scored a run in the bottom of the sixth, and then they closed it out in the top of the seventh. So,
CD Pelham close?
Or? No. Some guy I'd never heard of. And it had ERA that was near five. So I think Pelham must have pitched the first game, is the only thing I could think of. I don't know. I didn't see the box score from the first game. But yeah, I mean, it was a good little win for the Rough Riders. But I was expecting a little bit better showing from WayJ. But, you know, everyone has their off night. He's a scrawny little kid. He's got some growing to do, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I had one other minor league note that I really wanted to get to because it was very funny to me. And that was that Round Rock beat Memphis today, 3-1. All four runs in this game were scored on solo home runs, despite the fact that the teams combined for 25 hits. 25 hits.
Yeah, I saw that. That was awesome.
Four runs. Round Rock wins. Memphis hit a home run in the bottom of the second inning. Round Rock scored three runs in the fifth on consecutive no-out solo home runs. That was it. That was the whole game. Like, whatever.
That's baseball. That's the beauty of baseball. They had, I think Round Rock had 17 hits as a club.
They did.
17 hits, and they had three runs to show for it. That's insane.
Tommy Joseph, Andy Abanez, and Carlos Perez went back-to-back-to-back to lead off the fifth inning, and that was the whole game. Like, whatever. Just random baseball nonsense. So there you go. Sports ball. It's great stuff.
That's why we love this game.
It is. The only other minor league note that I have is that Spokane has been playing in Vancouver. If you are a box score scout, like many of us in Spokane, those of us who have not yet spoken to Dave Nichols, oops, my bad. You may notice that Diosbel Arias and JP Martinez have not been playing. It is almost certainly in the case of JPM because his visa is a one-way. He cannot travel to Canada to play baseball.
Uh-huh.
He is not hurt, as best we know. He cannot go to Vancouver to play baseball because they will not let him back into America. So that's probably why he's not traveling with Spokane right now.
Probably not worth that risk.
I would not be surprised if Dizzy Arias does not have the same situation. He may also be on a one-way visa. Arias, of course, is also a Cuban signee. So if you're a box score guy, rest assured, that's most likely the situation there. Doesn't seem to be any injury stuff that is being reported. Just hilarious maybe, immigration issues.
Maybe we can confirm that on a future podcast with Mr. Dave Nichols if we can make that happen.
That would be lovely, and we will make that happen. We will bring that content to you, our beloved listeners. And by that, we mean everyone who can hear this right now. You're a listener. Congratulations, you're a winner. A winner of this podcast.
Rangers Rundown listeners, actually good.
They are. They're very good. They're wonderful people. We hope you keep listening. We're going to have some more guest content coming in. Going to have some more things to discuss. Until then, just keep watching Rougned Odor and Joey Gallo be fantastic. Try to avoid, like, you don't really watch. Yeah, don't watch Martin Perez. Don't watch Drew Hutchison. Skip Giovanni Gallardo. I would say pass on Bartolo Colon. Watch Gerardo, Mike Minor. That's it.
Gerardo, look at through your fingers. Kind of keep your eyes hidden. But
watch like MLB at bat when Gerardo is pitching. If it looks good, tune in. Basically, just watch Mike Minor and everything else go, eh. It's just there. That's it. Whatever. Give any sage advice for us, Aiden? Is there a different pitcher we're missing out on here?
You know a guy that's been performing really well out of the bullpen from the left-handed side, which
if you
always
talk about Matt Moore, I'm going to fight you.
Here, Matt Moore, let me tell you something. He may have unlocked something from the left-handed side out of the bullpen. You never know. Piecing it together.
What's the split?
Part of the next
As a reliever, what's the split?
I have no idea.
Come on.
I'm just messing with you.
Come on.
I'll pull it up.
Ugh.
I did see an article on Twitter about Matt Moore reinventing himself as a reliever. I chose not to click on the article because it would just make me cringe. But apparently there is a body of evidence out there that suggests that he is doing that.
I'm not going to bother about reinventing stuff. I'm just going to watch Jose Leclerc be freaking fantastic.
Oh, man, so good.
This is incredibly good.
Matt Moore... it's so funny because like he has been better.
This better be funny.
Yes, it is funny. out of the bullpen, he has been better. His ERA is 5.28. So he's still been.
That's a lot better. To be honest, that's a lot better. Really,
but it's laughable really that
it's almost
an
three
improvement.
Runs better.
Okay. Yeah.
He was an eight as a starter, wasn't he?
He was 8.02 as a starter. So, so that's how. Okay, when you have a 5.28 ERA out of the bullpen, how bad you were as a starter, like the difference means that you get an article written about yourself that you've reinvented yourself. You have an ERA over 5, dude. Like, you have not reinvented anything. So, I mean, he's been a little bit better, and he's not taking starts away from, like, Jurado, which is good, I guess. But, yeah, that was...
He has been far better as a reliever. His TOPS Plus, which is a number that Baseball Reference uses to show, like, performance within a split relative to otherwise performance. So, like, a switch hitter's TOPS Plus is, like, his left-handed hitting compared to his overall hitting, or, like, you're hitting on Monday compared to your overall hitting, whatever the hell it is. As a reliever, Matt Moore has been 67 TOPS Plus, so far, far better than his normal. A negative number is very good there for a pitcher. But that's only because his, like, actual pitching was abysmal. Like, it was transcendentally terrible.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm sold. Let's go ahead and exercise that option for 2019.
Roll Tide.